the loss of the energetic. At 6:15 on the 25th of June, 1948, on a lovely summer's evening, we left our little home port of Port Leven after having bid farewell to our loved ones and telling them to expect us back tomorrow at midday. We were in company with 4 or 5 other boats which comprised the Long Line fleet. As we left the harbour and proceeded in a southwesterly direction, we could see at a distance a bank of fog, and after we had been on our way for an hour, we entered into this dense fog, at first thinking it might be patchy, but having continued for an hour and a half, we came to the conclusion that it must be widespread. By this time we had gone far enough and were in a position to shoot our bait nets. Before doing this, however, we discussed between ourselves the advisability of shooting the nets immediately or whether to wait a while to see if the fog would lift before darkness fell. This decision hung in the balance for some little time, but at last we decided it would be as well to shoot right away. It is needless for me to say how important that decision proved to be. At this time, we're all inwardly conscious of our danger, and we were sounding our foghorn at frequent intervals. Then we put our lights and were all on deck waiting for darkness to fall so that we could pull in our nets. In the meantime, we had heard 2 or 3 steamers pass down some distance from us, but now we could hear one approaching from the southeast, and by the sound of his foghorn we had the feeling that it was coming towards us and might come very near. So we lit a flare and continued sounding a foghorn. Not being under power, we were helpless to do anything more, but still the ship came on and on, and at last we saw her break through the fog about 300 yards from us and coming straight for us. We did everything in our power to draw her attention to our presence, but all was of no avail, and we now realized that nothing could be done to avoid a collision. As a crew, we now parted company. 3 of us went forward in the bows, and the rest stayed aft. I never saw them again. All we now could do was to wait for the moment of impact. The suspense was terrible, and I can see it all happening now. Crash! Into our side went the steamer, its bows going in about a third of the way and pushing us down on an even keel. The sea was rushing from aft towards us, and the next moment I was going down under the water, seemingly for ages, being drawn down and down by the suction from the boat. While underwater, I became conscious of the fact that I was holding something in my right hand. It was a canvas buoy, a float we used on our gear. Just how I came into possession of it, I don't know. But it was now drawing me quickly to the surface. My trip up and down must have been very quick, for when I came to the surface, I noticed that the steamer had not yet passed by, and the first thought that entered my head was the danger from the ship's propellers. So hanging on to the float, I did my utmost to kick myself away from the ship's side. I remember at this time being conscious of one of my brothers being close at hand, fighting for his life, but only for a moment, for the sea was in a turmoil, and he was soon dragged down, never to appear on the surface again. I was continually being drawn down underwater, but after a while the sea became calm for a time, and I was able to open my eyes and look around. At once I saw a shooting roller within easy reach of me. I grasped this, and at this moment I realized that all the air had gone out of the canvas float on which I had been holding. I let it go, for it was of no further use to me. The spar on which I now clung proved a very insufficient means of support. I kept going down and up, and when I was underwater, because of its circular shape and the motion of the ship, it was inclined to roll away from me, and I had great difficulty in holding on to it. Then it was that I heard the last dying gasp of one of my brothers, and I realized within myself that they were all gone and I was the only one left. At the full force of this broke upon me, I was overwhelmed and sorely tempted to let go. It seemed far easier for me to die than to live. But the Lord brought before me a vision of my wife and two dear children, and I pictured all that my loss would mean to them, and so I clung fast. Three times I was sorely tempted to let go, but each time the Lord brought the same vision before me. It was at this time that I looked around me once more, and there I saw, again within my reach, one of their dams, which is made of cork with a 12 or 14 foot staff up through the middle of it. This was used as a mark attached to a long line. Drawing this towards me, I placed my feet around the bottom and my arms around the top and felt fairly well supported in the water. Then I unlaced my boots and kicked them off one by one. I now had time to consider my position. I was out in the ocean 10 miles from the nearest land, surrounded by a thick fog. I thought that the steamer which sunk us had continued on its way, ignorant of the tragedy, and I felt alone in this ocean sea. How long would I be able to hold out? As I thought of my hopeless position, I lifted up my heart to the Lord, crying aloud, "O God, I know that I am thy child, and I am not afraid to die, but if it be possible, bring me out of this." How long I prayed, I have no knowledge. But after some time, as I looked around the west, I saw the mast aid lights of a steamer. Not realizing that it was the same ship that had collided with us, but thinking it was another steamer, I commenced shouting, "Help! Help! Help!" After some little time, I heard a voice directly behind me saying, "Hold on, old timer. We are coming." The next moment, I was taken aboard the ship's lifeboat, and as I felt someone cutting away my clothes, I became unconscious. I regained consciousness to find myself in the ship's hospital, being forced to drink hot milk and coffee, and being given a continual renewal of hot blankets. Another stretcher was wheeled into the sick bay, and upon it lay Mr. Mutant, who had gone to sea with us for a pleasure trip. He was unconscious, but still alive, and the second mate of the ship commenced artificial respiration at once. This continued for about 5 hours. Then one of the crew told me they would like to take me to another room. I knew the reason for this. Mr. Milton had gone beyond all human aid. You can imagine something of what I passed through as I lay there in the ship all night, and well into wondering how, when, and where I would get ashore, and how I was going to face my brothers, wives, and fatherless children, and my poor aged father. Continually, I cried to God to see me through. At midday, after being given a spare set of clothing, I was taken off the ship by a lifeboat from the Scilly Isles, and into the same boat was lowered the body of Mr. Mutant. It took us 3 hours to reach St. Mary's Harbour, and here I was interviewed by the custom officer, and had to go through the ordeal of giving a detailed account of all that had happened. But God's presence was very deep within me, and it was a strength and power outside of myself which was bearing me up. My ordeal was not yet complete, for I was taken away by the police officer to the mortuary to identify Mr. Mutant's body, and from there to the inquest. But God was true to his promise and was with me during this experience. It was now 4:30, and the literal steamer which plies between Scilly Islands and the mainland was due to leave for Penzance. We steamed in the harbour at 8:00. There was a great crowd there to meet me, amongst whom were my loved ones, including, of course, my wife. Pastor and Mrs. Matthews and a number of church members were there also. After reaching home, my doctor came, and amongst the questions he asked me was if I had taken any seawater. I told him that I did not remember having taken a spoonful. And after examination, he was amazed to this being true, particularly taking into consideration the fact that my not being able to swim and being submerged underwater so much, but I know it was God who was keeping me. The following day was a trying ordeal for me when a number of my nephews and nieces visited me. Many times during this experience, the enemy had led me to the very brink and depths of despair. But God, praise his name, kept me through it all, and he that had kept, I am confident, will keep, and it is to God that I give all the glory of preserving me. Ralph Richards. Portland's pride. They knew the sea from the Lizard to the Eddystones. Beams, the Longships, the Wolf Rock, and the Seven Stones. They could hug the rugged coast of Mount's Bay and make the harbor safely, while the spray of angry seas dashed on the jetty, raising as high almost as that quaint clock, then with a sigh, retreats to gather again its force to once more attack. This time the lifeboat house, then rolled suddenly back. Yes, they knew the sea, and they knew their trade. For countless trips the gallant and energetic made, and I have seen them sailing home, clean and grand, coming down from the horizon, the first to land. The treasures of the deep, their heart and skill, taxed to the utmost in their battle to fill. Their oars and baskets with spoils of the fray, that they deserve success, there's none that can gainsay. We've watched the six Richard brothers put to sea. We've seen their aged but nimble father on the quay. We saw them all standing in their dinghy for a joke, laughing like great schoolboys. Now, at a stroke from the mighty bows of the Christantia Star, the energetic's gone, and they have crossed the bar. And for many a year to come, on that seat along the wall, the sad story of the energetic, their friends will oft recall. For William, Gilbert, John, Tom, and Perkins too, will never be forgotten, nor will Ralph, who was spared to survive those who so bravely died on this fateful eve of St. Peter's Tide. God grant us all strength that we may be unshaken in our love, our faith in thee. For we folk of the cities to easily forget the loved ones of these men to whom we stand in debt. And through the years to come we pray thee keep from harm and lend to these their loved ones, O Lord, thine arm. The wreck of the Anne.